Today we celebrate the Feast of All Souls. And this is a feast that's been celebrated in our Catholic tradition to date back to the 10th century when Pope Gregory IV was the Pope. And shortly after, he implemented the Feast of All Saints. A saint by the name of Saint Virgilio began a practice of praying for all the souls in purgatory on the day after the Feast of All Saints. And that feast became wildly popular in Spain, and then when the Europeans came over to the Americas, that feast became wildly popular over here, especially in Mexico and in Central America. And in Mexico, the way they would celebrate the feast today is that families and friends of anyone who has been deceased would make food, and they'd go out to the cemetery, and they'd gather around the tombstone, and there they'd light candles, and they'd set out flowers, maybe marigolds, and they'd all have a meal together. And then afterwards, they would go home. And at their homes, they'd set up an altar. And on the altar, they'd place images of the deceased, maybe some of their favorite foods, some of their favorite possessions, any sort of a reminder of that person, as a way of reminding us that they really aren't that far from us. I think the image of the altar is very important, because throughout human history, the altar has always been a sign of where the divine and human unite. And so, right there at these altars is where the divine and the human unite. And here at St. Mary's, our custom isn't quite as elaborate as it is in Mexico, but we do have our altar here, we have our flowers, we have these candles set up burning. And then on our other altar here, we have the names of all the deceased. And they're sitting in those envelopes there. And that's important because it reminds us it's where the human and the divine unite. And part of our prayer is that those who have deceased have achieved salvation. And we can be very hopeful, because if we listen to the readings of St. Paul today, he tells us that the love of God is greater than the love of a parent for their children. Now I have a confession to make. Despite the fact that I've been driving around a car this week that has a sign that says, "Let me tell you about my grandchildren," I'm not a parent. That car belongs to my grandfather, and it'll be returned to him tomorrow. So I can't speak firsthand of what the love of a parent for a child is. But I am at an age where a lot of my friends are beginning to have children and beginning families of their own. And one thing I find when I talk to them, it's kind of a universal that I hear, is that they thought they understood what love was when they married their spouse. But when they had that child, they realized they didn't have at all an understanding of what the depth of love really is. They say, when you have that child, they tell me, "I can't explain it to you. It's so powerful." I was talking with my cousin in Houston with his wife, and she said, "I never thought I'd be able to love anyone more deeper than I can my husband. But then I had my daughter, and I can't imagine how I couldn't have seen this, because this has given me a whole new dimension on what the love of a parent for a child is." And St. Paul today reminds us that God loves us even more than that love. And the way we know this is because God gave up his only son, his only child, and he handed him over, allowing him to be beaten and ultimately crucified. And he loves us that much. And St. Paul says, if that's the case, if God is for us, then who can be against us? He's not saying that there's nobody out there who's working against us, but what he's saying is that love of God is so powerful that anyone working against us is worthless, it's meaningless, because it can't overcome that power of God. He tells us that there's no person who can separate us from the love of God. There's no angel or devil or demon that can keep us away from God. And there's no force, including the power of death, that can keep us away from God's loving embrace.